This program is being recorded for broadcast and replay on our website, on Awakening Together Radio, and on our YouTube channel. Please be aware that by speaking or typing on the board, you give consent to have your comments become a part of the recording. Okay, it's all yours.
Thanks, Don.
Good morning, everybody. Let's see what we do here first. Well, what we do here first is exchange hellos. So I will play our opening song as soon as I find it so we can do that. So let me get that up here.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic. Awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
What I do now, according to my schedule, is read our statement of purpose. So let me do that. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. A few minutes ago, I looked again at our core values to see which one applied. you know, I normally, this is the same talk that I do every time I talk. So I normally read you Awakening from the False Self or whatever we called this morning's service, something like that. Awakening from the Belief in the False Self, I think. So normally I read you core value number 3, and I'm going to read it. But after I read that, I realized that there was another one better. But let me read you core value number 3. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And then I dropped down to number 5 and realized that it was integral to letting go of the belief in the false self. And so let me read that to you. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. So thank you for letting me share those core values. Let me find whatever I did with the announcements. Okay. Join us tonight for Movie Watchers Discussion Group at 8 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific Time. This month's movie is The Sea of Trees with Matthew McConaughey, Naomi Watts, and Ken, I know, Watanabe or something like that. In this movie, an American professor travels to Japan in the midst of a personal crisis. As he wanders through a mysterious forest with a dark past, he experiences flashbacks of his fraught but loving relationship with his wife. And he meets an enigmatic stranger who is lost and injured. Arthur devotes himself to saving the stranger and returning him home to safety, and the two embark on a spiritual, life-changing journey of friendship, discovery, and healing. Let me see if I actually got the play sheet link. I tried to. Yeah, there's the play sheet link. If you haven't watched the movie already, you still have time to do that this afternoon. The play sheet this month is really designed to take you into some deeper contemplation about some of the themes that are brought up in the movie. So if you don't get that link, or if you're listening on the radio, you can go to our website under the to read. And I had a hard time finding it because I posted it so long ago. But if you go to the to read section, there's a little search bar that will open up, and you can type Sea of Trees in the search bar. So, and then the play sheet will come up under the movie post. The movie is available to watch on Netflix, Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu. And again, use this as a contemplative practice. The play sheet is really helpful in doing that this month. And so bring your insights back to the group and join us tonight again at 8 o'clock, when we'll discuss The Sea of Trees. The second thing I want to talk about is the fall retreat. I want to talk about it, this year's fall retreat. I want to talk about it from a little bit different perspective, because I want to let you know, if you're short on funds but would like to attend the fall retreat, we have two options available for you. First, we're offering volunteer scholarships. There is one volunteer scholarship for the self-awareness retreat, the first part of the fall retreat, from October 20th through the 26th. And there are two volunteer scholarships for the Satsang and Sangha retreat, the second half of the fall retreat, which will be from October 27th through November the 1st. It is possible for one person to receive a scholarship for both retreats as a volunteer. Volunteers will receive a full scholarship, which includes retreat, lodging, and meals. Volunteers will assist our retreat house caregiver, Cheryl Kaplan, with lighthouse cleaning and meal preparation. Volunteers may need to miss some portions of the retreat in order to be helpful. So that's the first option, is the volunteer scholarship option. The second option is a traditional scholarship. Those traditional scholarship recipients will be required to pay for lodging for the retreat. Meals during the retreat and the majority of the retreat fee will be gifted to the scholarship recipient. While these traditional scholarship recipients must pay for their own lodging, they will be able to focus on the entire retreat without interruption, whereas the volunteers may miss portions of the retreat as they're helping Cheryl do what needs to be done. So those are your two options. For more information about that, you can go to awakening-together.com www.fallretreat.org. Look under retreats and classes, and then under the fall retreat. I should note that neither of those scholarships includes transportation. So if you're applying for a scholarship, keep that in mind. You'll need to arrange for transportation, you know, airfare, whatever, to get to Colorado, and then transportation from your airport to the retreat house. All right. Our upcoming April retreat is Self-Inquiry Dyads. This retreat is for everyone interested in an extremely deep experience of self-inquiry. And I can tell you that any time that I've gone to a dyad retreat, I've just had just amazing insight. So this is really, really powerful. Psychologists have discovered that these dyads, the two people sharing in a structured way, is a powerful means of going deeper within oneself in order to see that which is beyond our daily conscious awareness. This is the practice we'll utilize at the retreat. It's a structured silent retreat led by Ann Blanchard, myself, and with an introduction by Reverend Regina Dawn Akers. By the way, I wanted to let you guys know that Ann Blanchard and Kate Brennan recently demonstrated self-inquiry dyads in Ann's program, Unfiltered. So if you register for the retreat or considering attending, you may want to check out the audio for that program under Audios and Videos, Sanctuary Highlights, Ann Blanchard. And then it's the latest program, and it's titled Self-Inquiry Dyads or something like that. You should be aware that the lodging at the retreat house is full, but there are some really cute little cabins within walking distance, really, really close. Thanks, Dawn, for that. Anyway, there's a there are cabins really close, real cute cabins, real reasonable price. And so there's still room at this retreat, and we would love for you to attend. And again, it can be a real game changer. So we invite you to do that. Dawn noted the name of Ann's program, Dyad Practice. So if you want to see what that looks like, be sure to check out her program. And I also want to tell you about our May retreat at the retreat house. It's called Silence and Satsang. It will be held May 13th through the 17th. At this retreat, you will have ample time to go within through reading, contemplation, journaling, and meditation, while also having an opportunity to sit with Regina Dawn Akers in short question and answer periods each day. Through rotating periods of silence and satsang, you will have the opportunity to probe deeper into spiritual intuition, emerging from your exploration with greater clarity and insight. The purpose of this retreat is to help you take your next step with God or with truth, whatever that next step may be. Optional silent outings in beautiful Colorado are included as part of this retreat. And again, the retreat's led by Reverend Regina Dawn Akers. For more information, again, you can go to our website and look under retreats at the retreat house. Let me look and see where we are. All right. And I'm going to play up a song for us to settle in with. This is an oldie but a goodie. When Ken was here, we heard it a lot. But it was just perfect for what we're talking about. So,
could there be more to this life we call mine than a journey through space or a storyline? To life than the body can sense, than the mind can conclude from experience.
Have a moment of prayer. Father, I know that there is one truth, and that truth is you. I know that to the extent that I believe in a separate me who has separate needs and separate desires, I'm blocking the vision of you and your truth. And as we go into this service, I would ask you, Father, what would you have me do? What would you have me say? And how would you have me share your love for us? Amen. All right. Reverend Tony Fields is going to read to us from an article called Awakening from Our False Self to Our True Self. So I will turn the mic over to Tony.
Thank you, Jacqueline. I just want to say what a beautiful prayer that was. I felt it deeply in my heart, and I appreciate that. Okay, here the reading. In early childhood, if something authentic within us, for example, an essential quality or our true self, is not acknowledged and mirrored back to us by our parents, we presume it is unimportant, so we repress it and develop ego structures that will help us cope without it. Psycho-spiritual development is about reversing that process, removing the blockages, bringing things into the light, and turning the repression into expression. Self-realization only becomes possible when sufficient psychological undoing has been completed. When our conditioning has been neutralized and our awareness has been purified, example, disidentified from exiles and ego structures. Even though self-realization is an instant event, there are several stages leading up to it that can be used to gauge our progress and guide us onto the next stage of our journey. Stage one involves consciously noticing our thoughts, emotions, and body sensations. Stage two involves realizing that these thoughts, emotions, and sensations are not us. Stage three involves realizing that we are the awareness that is noticing these things. Stage four involves developing a felt sense that we are this awareness. Stage five involves experientially knowing and feeling that we are pure awareness. Step six involves experientially knowing and feeling that awareness, God, life, universe, is being us. The labyrinth of our inner journey. Most of us are suffering from mistaken identity, taking ourselves to be someone we are not. The goal of psycho-spiritual development is to correct this mistaken identity, not to strengthen or improve our false identity. The self that we think we are does not exist. It is a figment of our imagination. The self that we think we are cannot awaken. We have to awaken from that false self in order to realize our true self. When this occurs, we realize that we have always been our true self. Our inner journey takes us through the labyrinth of our ego structure to discover our true self at the core of our being. A labyrinth differs from a maze in that it only has one path which leads to the center. So the path is already mapped out for us. All we have to do is walk it. If we stop resisting and controlling, the flow of life will naturally carry us to our destination. Some parts of the journey will be tough and others will be wonderful, but they will all be experiential opportunities for the reintegration, development, and liberation of our consciousness. The most effective way of journeying through the labyrinth of our ego structures is to do so with conscious awareness and presence, because then we can process the psychological material, dissolve the ego structures, and reintegrate our consciousness as we encounter it. Then, when we finally reach the core of our being and realize our true self, we can be confident that we will not relapse back into ego identification, because the ego will have largely been dissolved. Temporary self-realization is the result of jumping to the core of our being through intense will without dissolving the ego structures. If this occurs, it is only a matter of time before the lure of ego pulls us back out again, because too many ego structures remain for the self-realization to be permanent. Our conditioning can cause us to remain misidentified with the ego self longer than necessary. So here are a few simple things that we can do to loosen our identification with our ego self. Don't take things personally. Let go of any definitions or concepts of yourself as a personal I, and see yourself as impersonal, pure awareness. Forgive everyone and everything. You can't change what has happened, so why hold on to the personal feeling of victimhood? Be selfless. Put other people's needs ahead of your own, and dedicate part of your life to serving or helping others. Be authentic at all times. Don't put on a different persona for different occasions. Have fewer preferences and opinions, especially about things that don't really matter. Non-duality. Self-realization results in non-dualistic perception, a direct and intimate unity with everything we encounter. But what does it really mean, and how does it work? Dualistic perception. The true self has forgotten who it really is and believes it is a false self, a conceptual self-image. So the false self stands between the true self and objective reality. The false self perceives the object, and the true self believes it is the false self perceiving the object. So there is no direct perception. There is separation between the true self and the object, hence duality. The false self doesn't actually do any perceiving, because it is just a thought form. It is more like a lens that the image passes through and often gets distorted on its way to being perceived by the true self. Non-dualistic perception. With the false self no longer present, the true self can perceive the object directly. There is nothing between the true self and the object. So the true self can intimately merge with the object to directly perceive every attribute, hence unity or non-duality. And that's the end of the reading. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Well, all right. To start, this seems like it's a sweet article. It seems pretty basic, but I think that's what I appreciate about the article. I think it's important to look at the fundamentals, and it looks at these stages of looking at the belief in the false self. It breaks them down, and I really appreciated how those stages were broken down here in the article. I also liked at the end of the article this description of non-duality, because this description of non-duality given here is one that is coming more and more into my awareness. It's so strange to me how this self, this perspective of a personal self is so persistent that even as I'm paying lip service to, even as I'm out here sharing and teaching from what I think I know about self-realization, these conditioned ways of thinking persist. Even as I'm attempting to let go of the perspective of the personal self, I'm clinging to it pretty tightly. It's habitual. So let me share with you. I have nothing prepared. A long time ago, Regina told me, don't prepare for these talks. Her method of preparation is to, and I hope I get this right, Regina, I hope I don't say anything that's not true, but it's to, the reading comes to her in whatever way it comes. Oh, this is the reading. And then just to share from that reading, in the moment, from inspiration. And, I've tried to do that off and on, but then I'll take a few notes or I'll read some articles or do whatever. But this talk would not be prepared, I just couldn't. And that actually kind of goes to the heart of what's being said here. And that is that, as much as we go, I know that it's the personal self isn't going to wake up, that things are done through me. As much as we pay homage to those ideas, very often, that's not my experience. But this article came of its own accord, and wouldn't be expanded on prior to this talk. And I can tell you that, that felt fine this weekend. I felt fine all day yesterday. When I woke up this morning, I went, oh my God, you got to talk. You have no idea what you're going to talk about. And it's, that's the perspective of the personal self. That's the personal self with the agenda. That's personal to me. I mean, it's human nature. It's not, it doesn't make me bad. It's not a bad thing. It just shows you what the fallback is. The fallback is you've been given this role, this duty to go and share something of some consequence with the people who are listening. So Jacqueline comes in and gets her stuff all ready. This personal self is now going to, hopefully I'm not going to do that, but this is the thought, is now going to pass some knowledge from here to there. And she's either going to do a good job or a bad job. So there's a measure there. There's an agenda there. The terror is in being, you know, seen a fool. Oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. That's all from the perspective of the personal self. I mean, and that's what we do in every avenue of our life, in every encounter. How is Dawn going to perform in this situation? How is Jacqueline going to perform in this situation? And so this is the filter that was being talked about in this portion of this called non-duality. The false self stands between the true self and the and objective reality. So objective reality is to just come in here and do what I've been tasked to do. I got the article in front of me. See what comes through me. Not see how well a job I can do of, you know, summarizing this and delivering it to you. You know, as if any of us were sitting here, any of us, that inspiration would come through, that it's not unique to me. In fact, when I was listening, we're going to have a satsang guest in May named Eshwar Zigobind. And I was listening to an interview of his, and he was talking about having lost his sense of a personal self. And I had a real aha moment with that and I want to go through these stages here, but one of those things is stage two involves realizing that these thoughts, emotions, and sensations are not us. And I got a real sense of that at the Enlightenment Intensive I went to earlier this year. And we can talk a little bit more about that, but the way this coalesced with what I heard Eshwar talking about was, you know, I've been saying you are not your thoughts, but as I heard him talk, I went, oh my goodness. And there's no you outside of those thoughts either. Because somehow through this filter, I still seem to be thinking of not necessarily improving this personal self, or awakening this personal self, but maybe exchanging this self for an awakened self. So maybe not being run by the mind, but still being an intact something that would somehow have access to a greater store of wisdom or something, but I still saw this intact self moving from here to here. And what I'm seeing is that that's not true. I see I felt the wisdom in what Eshwar was sharing in that interview about life occurring, being this being, being done through, although I don't think he used that term, as opposed to doing. And I guess what's key to that is this idea the false self, you know, or you could just, when you say false self, I mean, I think this was part of the confusion that I was experiencing. When you say false self, as opposed to true self, because of our conditioned thinking, we still think of this little self moving into some true state. Even if we're not changing that self, it's like there's a little false self and there's a little true self. And the truth is, the true self is everything that is. So to say self can like take the mind in the wrong direction. But at any rate, this idea, the false self doesn't actually do any perceiving. Why is that? That's because it's just another thought form. So when we talk about, it's just another thought form. So when we talk about no longer focusing on, when we talk about where we cast our attention, one of the things we cast our attention on is this belief of in a false self. We may not realize it, but we use that as a centering device. I mean, that's the first thought, although we don't realize we're having it. And what we're invited to do is to look and see that the thought of an I itself, as an I separate from the trees and the breeze and the birds, that thought that there's something here distinct from any of that in any way, that's just a thought. That's just another thought that we're invited to see through, to see the falsity of. Yeah, Regina notes, that's why some people call truth no self. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she was referring to this thing about self being confusing, false self, true self. But no self, I think, is a much better, I want to say a way to begin to conceptualize that. And there's got to be a bridge. You know, we talk about letting go of concepts, but there's got to be, it seems to me, there's got to be something to reach for. In fact, I was instructed to begin, let me see. Don't see it. I was instructed to begin to see things as I see things, to realize that I am not separate from them. Invited to just quit seeing, seeing myself as the, even as the observer. Sorry, I'm trying to get there. You know, as if I were observing something else, but to see myself as one, with the things around me. Much like A Course in Miracles lessons, right? I'm not separate from that bookcase. I'm not separate from those pictures, but to feel it in my heart. And of course, that's where all those, at least the early Course in Miracles lessons are leading us, is to this attempt to, you know, break through that conception, that ball of ideas that we carry around as a self, and to dissolve those boundaries that I would place between, you know, the seer and the seen. It's all one thing. And this is a phrase that seems to keep coming up for me. The seer, the seeing, and the seen are all one thing. And again, you know, in terms of something to reach for, that may not make any logical sense. You may not be able to process that through what we know as the thinking mind. But to look at and say, what does that mean with the heart in contemplation? Well, that's something to reach for. To move beyond the boundaries of this cluster of thoughts that we call ourselves. So let's look for a minute at these stages that this, I guess it's a fella, Julian, I don't know, that this fella talks about in this article. And let me tell you, the reason I like these stages is because they're so discreetly broken down that that's not normally the way that we've looked at them, I don't think. And I think it's important to see them in these discrete little sections. Not so we can check our progress, as the article writer said, but so that we can make sure we're not missing it, that we're not attempting to skip stages, because each of these things is required. The first stage involves consciously noticing our thoughts, emotions, and body sensations. Because if you're running on autopilot, there's nothing to work with, right? So we have to become consciously aware of all of our thoughts, our emotions, and our body sensations. And you know, we've talked about this for a long time, and what can be really helpful, what is really helpful, in that regard, is to slow things down. I've absolutely got to spend time slowing down. And I do that by sitting in silence. As this thing says, you know, what we're doing is we're undoing our conditioning, or as we talk about gentle healing, we are reprogramming the brain. And an important part of that reprogramming is allowing the spaciousness to begin to see the way our brain works, to begin to see the thoughts that we are feeding ourselves. And, you know, A Course in Miracles talks about make no exceptions. It talks about you're much too tolerant of mind wandering. You know, when it talks about being too tolerant of mind wandering, it's not talking about, oh, you're daydreaming, quit daydreaming. No, it's talking about being vigilant to pick out those thoughts we're having. You know, this is not a hobby. This is not something we do as a pastime. This is why Michael Langford talks about increasing the desire for liberation. If you have a real desire to see through the false self to the truth of no self, then this is going to be your passion. You're going to watch for your thoughts the way a cat watches a mouse hole. What is this next thought? This is a full-time devotion. What is it? What am I feeding back into this equation? what thoughts am I gobbling up and taking back down? And, you know, would that maintain that barrier, that maintain me within this bubble of thought that keeps me separate from the all that is, that keeps me feeling separate from the all that is? Because the truth is, I am the all that is. There are no boundaries. But each with each thought, I'm taking in little bites that continue to build that seeming boundary. So each thought has to be examined. Not just when I have time. Not just when I'm in a good mood. I mean, doing that, doing it a little at a time, might make your life better, might make you feel better, might make you a little bit happier. But if you're going for the gusto, if you're going for the no self, truth or bust, you can really see that there are no idle thoughts. So we can't begin to, we can't let go of what we're not aware is there. So we can't really begin this path through the labyrinth without seeing what's there, what's feeding this sense of self. And then stage two is defined here. It says stage two involves realizing that these thoughts, emotions, and sensations are not us. And, you know, it directly flows from the first one. First, you got to be conscious of them. Because when you're not conscious of them, then that is just you. That's what you just think. You know, I'm not thinking these, you know. Let me back up because that wasn't right. Really, at that point, that is right. Because at that point, if you're not examining these things, this is just what happens. This is just me. This is just the way life is. So you got to step back from them to see what's really going on. And then this was a real insight for me at this last Enlightenment intensive, realizing that these thoughts, emotions, and sensations are not us. So how does one do that? Well, you know, willingness is always key. Willingness and grace. You've got to be willing to see that these thoughts are not you. One way to think about this is to notice that these thoughts simply arise and fall. And I really noticed that when I was this morning in meditation. You know, and you all have all done it. These thoughts just come in. I don't think, well, now I'm going to think about, you know, whether I get the coffee made before, you know, if I have time to make coffee before, you know, no, but that thought just comes in. And I can see that thought and let it go, which we've been instructed to do. But all of these thoughts, I know you've all done it. And, you know, unless you're perfect meditators, and I don't know that I've ever met one, but thoughts will come in. Are you going, oh, I'm going to think these thoughts now? No. You didn't will that these thoughts come in. So they arise and something sees them. So you know you're not your thoughts. Are you that which sees them? I don't know. It's worth looking at. But at least you're once removed from believing I am those thoughts. I mean, this is the path that we have to go down. And I love that this talked about the path. You know, there's only one, talked about the labyrinth, and I hadn't thought about it before. It's not a maze. You It's a labyrinth. You will be carried down this path, but you won't be carried down this path unless you dig into it, unless you begin to investigate these things. If you don't begin to investigate these things, then you're stuck with this perspective of the personal self, of the false self. You will continue to believe that you are separate from everything because that's what we've been trained to do, whatever the psychological, you know, he talked about childhood in this, but, you know, whatever the reasons are, this is what we've been conditioned to do, is to believe the thoughts are us and to act from those thoughts, one of which is that I'm a thinker that has these thoughts. Not that these thoughts just occur to me. Not that these are thoughts just rise and fall. Stage three involves realizing that we are the awareness that is noticing these things. So we talked about that a minute ago. The thoughts just rise and fall. I'm the one that's noticing the thoughts. What is that? What is that? Let's dig into that. What's that feel like? What is that? What is that? This is a self-investigation. I can't tell you what that is. Nobody can tell you what that is. It's an investigation. Stage four involves developing a sense that we are this awareness. You know, this, it's interesting because these stages could be seen as like stages within a single meditation, I realize, and stages on the journey. But as we begin to dig, this is organic, right? This will come out of the digging. This beginning realization that we are the awareness that notices the rising and falling of thoughts. And by sitting in that awareness, we begin to develop this felt sense that we are that awareness. Stage five involves experientially knowing and feeling that we are pure awareness. Working on it. I had a phone call with Eshwar in preparation for this satsang, and he was talking about a way to do that. Experiential awareness is, you know, to withdraw our, well, to get that self out of the way, that narrator in the middle, that one who would define it and whatever the experience is. He's like, if you get up in the morning and wash your hands, you know, it's like we saw in Peaceful Warrior, right? Just feel the water on the hands. Just be the experience. Just be with the experience that you're having without narrating it, without defining it, without, you know, saying how that experience affects your future plans. Not that washing your hands would, but, you know, I've heard Regina talk about it, washing the dishes. Just wash the dishes. Be with that experience. Consciously work to remove the filter. And then stage six involves experientially knowing and feeling that awareness, God, life, universe, is being us. And this is that idea of being done through. And it occurs to me to say that none of this is possible if if we adopt the agenda of the personal self. And how do we know whether we're adopting the agenda or not? And that's actually very difficult, because if we're not consciously focused on not being driven by an agenda of the personal self, we're going to miss it. So how do we not come from some personal self agenda? Well, we've talked about that for a long time. That's loving what is. Loving what is. That's having no objection to the way anything shows up. Who would have an objection to the way anything shows up? Could only be the personal self. So you may say, well, I have no agenda but to wake up. Well, all right, then you must not object to anything. Right? So we're given some pointers here too in this article about ways to loosen our identification with ego self. The first is, don't take things personally. And this is the definition of it. Seems a little redundant, but let me read it. Let go of any definitions or concepts of yourself as a personal I and see yourself as impersonal pure awareness. Okay, great. How do I do that? Don't take things personally. It's really well put, because It's just really practical way to look at this. First of all, are my feelings hurt? Whose feelings are hurt? Do I feel pumped up because somebody said, "Oh, great job, Jacqueline! Good sermon." Right? I mean, both sides of that are taking things personally. So it's okay. Doesn't make you bad. But where am I taking things personally? Where am I feeling that hit or that elation because somebody noticed something I did? It's just an invitation to go, oh, I see the personal self is feeding. Just notice. The second, forgive everyone and everything. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I have taken something personally. Let that go. Why? Because I know what I want. I want to move beyond the personal self who has been victimized. I don't want to take things personally. Why? Because if I take things personally, I'm buying the thought, I'm feeding the thought that I'm separate from all that is. So what do I want more? What do I want? So again, it's just a lovely way to remind yourself of how you're continuing to feed the belief in the personal self. If you see someone and you see a grievance, you can go, oh, I see that. I see how I'm feeding that belief in a personal self. Again, the next one is, be selfless. Put other people's needs ahead of your own and dedicate part of your life to serving or helping others. And, you know, we've talked about this in our retreat house meetings about being servants, putting other people first. It can be as simple as not taking the best room or the best chair in the room. Right? Why? Because who wants the best chair in the room? This personal self. Quit feeding the personal self. And this one I thought was really interesting. Be authentic at all times. Don't put on a different persona for different occasions. And we know what this is like. We're one way with our family members. We're another way when we're speaking in public. We're another way when we're, you know, with our closest friends. What is that? I mean, it's just another area for investigation. Notice how that happens. What's going on? What am I feeding? What desires am I feeding here? Is it the desire for no self? And I think what we find is we begin to see how we feed this false self with our willingness not to do so, is I think we become a whole lot quieter. I really do. Regardless of, you know, your personality, there's a lot less to say. And then this last recommendation feeds right into that. Have fewer preferences and opinions, especially about things that don't really matter. And most of it doesn't really matter. Most of it. So what are you doing when you express an opinion? Well, here's what I think about, you know, the situation in Washington. Who thinks it? What are you believing in when you believe you have an opinion? Who has that opinion? Who needs an opinion? I see Tony has posted the, looks like Ron did too, the link to this article. Again, it's a sweet little article, and I just think it's particularly those stages at the beginning just really help you see how we've got to dig down, question everything, question everything. We are in this to reprogram our way of being. You know, it's the same thing Course in Miracles talks about with taking off the layers, taking the blinders off, taking out the middleman between what we are and what we experience. I mean, that's a beginning stage. And Inner Wisdom said that to me, and I realize I'm out of time, so I'm going to be quiet here in just a second. But Inner Wisdom said that what did it say? Allowing everything to be as it is a beginning step in allowing the true relationship of the inner and the outer. So let's, you know, look for our objections to the way things are. Let's look for our opinions. Let's look for our preferences. Let's not just be complacent and go, you know, well, we'll get there eventually. Not without this true and deep investigation guided through willingness and grace. All right. Thanks, guys. I think that's it. I'm going to play another song. This will be an opportunity to contemplate what's been said and an opportunity to donate. Don will post a link to donate. So here goes. Uh-oh, wait. I gotta bring that up first. There you go. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm Iman. It looks like I talked way longer than I should have because we are right up to the fellowship half hour. Anybody who would like to share can share during this half hour fellowship. I apologize for taking your sharing time from you. All right, so I'll let go of the mic.